Welcome everyone to the Friends That Carry On podcast, where we dive deeper into our trips, unpack tips, and everything in between. Now sit back, relax, and get ready to go on a trip with your favourite group of friends.
Hello everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Friends That Carry On podcast. We're a group of friends who love to travel the world together, and we're here to share our stories. So, in the studio today, we have Mr. Eric Fargo, Jim Scott, and Brian Romine.
Hey, everybody.
And I am Tony Price, and welcome. So, again, we want to make sure everybody goes and checks out the website, friendsthatcarryon.com, and please subscribe to any place you listen to your podcast, and, of course, any place on social media, Friends That Carry On. And again, when you get to the website, make sure you register. We have a lot of free things that come along and keeps you up to date on opportunities and specials and things like that. And also stay tuned for the new fan page that's coming up where we're going to have, well, when you kind of join the fan, there's going to be several things, probably a t-shirt, a couple other giveaways. But the big thing is you're going to be entered into at least winning, what do we say, four trips?
At least four trips
annually, yes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Four trips?
Some of them we may or may not be on. You know, you don't have to hang out with us, but, right?
You may not want to. More than likely, you won't want to.
But it's going to be pretty cool, and you have a really, really high odds of winning. That's the big thing. And then the more times you either, you know, refer friends, get additional people to register and download and listen to the podcast, you increase your chances of winning. So, and there'll be cool trips. We're talking like river cruises in Europe.
Nice.
You know, cool stuff. So definitely stay tuned for that.
Maybe someplace in Mexico.
Maybe. We're working on it.
Ducana.
Maybe.
Adios, amigos.
Yeah. So there we go. All right. So how you guys doing?
Doing
excellent.
Great today.
Good. Good, good,
muy
good.
Muy bien.
Good. What, you feeling that, huh?
Yeah, I'm feeling it
all
today,
right,
man.
He's working on
Espanol today.
He's working it. I wonder why.
Yeah, well, because we're going to Pamplona.
Ah, yeah. Oh,
so Eric got to announce the location.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. It's what's near and dear to most of our hearts.
Mm.
And, I mean, we're coming up when this gets released. It will likely be the week prior to.
Right.
The Festival of San Fermín, which we've been to multiple times.
Or what would have been this year.
What would have been this year. I think, is this the first time it's been canceled?
As far as I can tell, right.
Yeah. Right. Since the kind of like the modern era. I mean, it's just, I know, we'll talk about it, of course. There's a lot of disappointed friends.
Oh, man, it's something. They look so forward to this week, with 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, because as soon as January 1st starts, you have the countdown. Mm. You know, it's literally by the days and the month, and, you know, kind of sucks. But we're still going to relive some of the good times of it and some of the great things that we love about, you know, Pamplona.
You remember those?
Yeah, most of them. We got pictures, and I got you guys reminded.
All right, so, pictures. Right? Yay.
But, you know, we've talked about Pamplona at least four times on previous podcasts. I know it was part of our first one, first podcast, which was just over a year ago.
Yep.
And, of course, that was about our epic trip from 2013, and it was kind of thrown in there.
It wasn't solely focused
on
Pamplona.
No, not at all. None of them have been. And that's why we felt like, wow, we've gotten this far, and we haven't actually talked specifically about Pamplona.
Exactly.
And it's funny, we could probably invite 30 different people onto this to have these discussions, and...
Nobody would get a word in edgewise over someone else.
It would have to be a week-long episode.
Just invite one person at a time.
But we also hit it again on episode 27 when we talked about top places to grab a cocktail around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Or around the world, sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we mentioned Bar Chaco,
right,
which we'll talk about later. We also hit it in episode 31, unique places to stay, when we talked about Hostel Hemingway.
Yep.
Episode 39, when we interviewed John Hemingway.
Mm-hmm.
And then episode 42, which one was that one? You guys remember?
I don't remember that one off the top of my head, but
I wrote it down. That was the one where we talked about after coronavirus and the travel restrictions lifted, what are some of the places we'd love to go to?
Mm.
And that was where we hit it on that. So,
But we never got real specific about
we haven't. Huh? Not at all. And you know, and we've touched on it. You know, we touched on it again with all of those, but nothing really specific.
Well, come on, guys. Let's get specific. Well,
okay. Yeah, there are a lot of specifics.
There are.
I mean, it's got to be one of the, as far as bucket list trips, it's running with the Bulls has to be on one of the top bucket list trips on anywhere. I mean, maybe some women might not think that, but I mean, that's one you think of, you know, Oktoberfest and that type of stuff. But running with the Bulls, it's got its own connotation, sort of its own league.
And it is interesting. You mentioned, you know, maybe not some of the women. And what I was reading was within the country of Spain, there's not many Spaniard women that actually run with the Bulls, but the women that you actually do see running now are more foreigners.
Yeah, probably. That's pretty much.
Yeah. I guess it's just the culture and
tradition
and mm-hmm. things of that sort. So I found that interesting.
I mean, they do. I mean, there are women who run now.
Yes, definitely.
For sure.
Definitely. Yeah. Oh,
for sure. You know, and we've talked about there are tons and tons of runs, not just Pamplona. It's the most infamous. Yeah, I mean, it's throughout Spain. And we have a lot of friends that we've met in Pamplona who have done, I mean,
many
runs. So, yeah.
Well, even in Pamplona, it's not just one run. I think.
Oh, you're talking about the number of days?
Yeah, just I think many people think they're running with the Bulls and it's just kind of one run and that's it. But I've never been there. But
yeah, so the San Fermín Festival always starts July 6th, at least in the modern day era. Starts on July 6th. First run is on July 7th, and it runs through the 14th. And then closing ceremonies is midnight of the 14th.
Mm-hmm.
The Chupinaza is kind of the opening ceremony leading up to it. And
that's
to this day, you know, you talk about events, and again, we have talked about this, but, you know, I've been to some of the big ones. You know, Jim mentioned Oktoberfest and being to Mardi Gras in New Orleans. But I will still say to this day, that is one of the craziest experiences ever. Just absolutely crazy.
That was nuts.
That's like, and it depends on what time you get there. So, again, opening ceremony is on the 6th at noon.
Mm-hmm.
But people get into Town Hall Plaza. What time did we get there? 8:30, 9 o'clock?
I came and went twice.
Yeah. That's right. You had to go get a hat.
Get a hat. We got there like 10-ish, 9:30, 10, and it was easy to walk around. The knowing thing was at noon. But then, though there was a crowd, it wasn't overwhelming.
Right.
And Jeremiah and I went back to get hats because we're both follically challenged. And the Spanish sun in July would have done some damage. So we went back to get our hats, which was, you know, probably a 15-minute walk each way. And we got back. I mean, it was a struggle to get back to the middle. I mean, it had become packed. And we're both good-sized guys, and we had our wives with us, and it was a struggle to get through the crowd. It took to go 30, 40 yards, probably took a half hour, 40 minutes to get that far.
I think that was still like at like 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Yeah, this,
right?
this is probably 11 o'clock, right. Another hour to go before the actual ceremony.
Let's give the listeners an idea of how many people are packed in. So that square where they open everything up, give me an idea how big you think that square is. Rough idea, just to give them an idea.
I honestly don't know the size of Town Hall. I mean, it's
not a block.
No, it's a half a block.
Maybe a third of a block.
Yeah, it depends on where you're talking about. But I mean, it's only the width of Town Hall. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not much wider than that.
You can look it up online.
At most, it's 40 or 50 yards wide and maybe 60, 70 yards deep.
Right. Yeah. How many people would you say they pack in there in the opening?
10,000-15,000.
It was crazy.
It's the biggest mosh pit you've ever partaken in your life.
It was. And it's, you know, again, it was just an experience. You know, we talked about it. Like, it's one of those things you feel like you always should do. Not sure I would do it again.
Yeah.
Other than we were supposed to take our good friend, Gary Yankee, who has been multiple times, but he hasn't been to opening ceremony yet.
Really?
Yeah, and so we were like, okay, we'll go one more time to opening ceremonies to go with Yank. But
did you do that?
No, we haven't yet. Last year,
we talked about maybe doing this year, and then of course it's gotten canceled because of COVID.
And last year he didn't get it.
And he's run how many times? This is funny. He's run how many times? Probably a dozen, maybe?
No.
More than that. Yeah.
Okay.
He usually runs like we do, like four times, I guess, each year. And he's gone every year since 14.
He's had all those runs and he's never partaken in the opening ceremony.
Well, it's tough for a lot of us, too, from the States, because it the July 4th holiday. Yeah. And he's got kids, too. So it's one of those things that, you know, it's kind of hard to get there for the 6th. You obviously have to hit out of here by the 4th or the 5th.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it a tight schedule.
And a lot of times the experienced runners like to come and run the second or third day of the running because they get less, they're not as busy. You know, that first day.
First day, but also the weekend.
It depends when it falls.
Yeah.
Weekends is usually the craziest. But it's an awesome experience. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I think our first year we went, you know, because it was a bucket list thing. It was also, you know, Jim Reed's 50th birthday kind of wish. And we did that. But, you know, it's kind of turned into so much more than that for a lot of us as far as the friends we've, you know, made over the years. And I don't know who said this, but it's like it's either kind of get it and you kind of get addicted to it, or you're like, okay, yeah, done. And you never think about it again. And
absolutely. Which I'll be honest, leading up to the first trip, that's what I expected. We were going to be there a few days, one run, get in, get out, having said we did it and move on. But there was sort of an addiction to it. There was just an electricity in the crowd, the whole festival, everything about it. And then our one buddy, Jeremiah, he instantly got addicted.
Oh, my, yeah.
He was instant. That first run, which the adrenaline is incredible, which I'm sure we'll talk about here in a little bit. But, I mean, he was in. After that first run, had told his now wife, I'm coming to this every year. And he has done that, obviously, except for this year. And just was all in. So he's... And he'd already made some connections, which helped us learn a lot about it with what's called the Pamplona Posse, a group of people mainly from Scotland, Britain, and that type of area. And just really got in with them, which made it easy for us as we've come back to meet these people, even though we met some of them on that initial trip. And by meeting all those people, it makes it easier. It's almost like if you like going back to your college for homecoming, it's sort of like that because you're going to go, you got some good friends there, people you have a good time with, and it's a big party. Mm-hmm. So it's truly like a homecoming every year. So it's really cool.
It truly is. Yeah.
But if you don't like homecoming, you're probably not going to like this.
Well, you know,
without football. Homecoming with bull running.
Right. You know, what's unique about it, though, is – you know, people hear about it and they just think, you know, giant bull run, a big party, and there's so much more to it. You know, and you know, I don't want to go kind of like a history lesson, but
no, I mean, some of the history wouldn't be bad, to be honest. How did it get here? Because in today's political climate, bull running and bullfighting is certainly not politically correct. So why is this a tradition, and where did it come from?
Yeah.
And
Well, it's actually a combination of two different things. So it used to be you celebrated the Saint for Men, and that was in October.
Saint. Right.
And then in July, that was kind of more of a commercial parade of animals, really.
Right. Yeah. I mean, going back to
livestock festival.
The either 12th century or the 1500s, it varies in when you look at different histories of it. But back then, the cattlemen they had planes out there, so they're bringing their cattle in, herding them in off the plains into where the butchers are. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's like a stock sale or anything else. But as they got into the city, then people would follow and chase with the bulls, even though it's not like what it is today. We got thousands. I mean, you had whatever, 10, 15, 20. But it just sort of became a tradition when they got to those city streets leading up to the to wherever the butcher or wherever they sold their beef or cattle or whatever, the stock sale. And then that tradition became a festival. And then that was in July, which still is. And then, like Tony was saying, the Saint Fermin Festival was in October. So the folks of Pamplona over the time said, I don't know why they didn't need two festivals, but they decided to combine them.
It was 1591 is when they combined it. And, of course, you know, it's truly about history.
A few years ago.
Well, they said that, one, the weather was better in Correct. It is in July. Than it is in October. But that's when they kind of combined the two festivals. And then the official bull running part of it started, at least the first references to it was the 17th century. And then, of course, the Parade of Giants, that started in the 19th century. And then the bull ring was actually built in 1844.
So what's the Parade of Giants?
It's giant heads, I guess, but it's giants. They're these figures, I guess they're historical figures, but they're kind of like a cartoon or a character of them, and they stand probably 10, 12, 15 feet tall. You know, it's somebody underneath, but they've got stilts or whatever on to build them up, and they parade through the festival.
So, damn, they're not real people.
Well, they are real people.
They were real people.
They were.
Underneath
the giants are.
The giants.
But, you know, we talked about that first trip, and, again, some of the people we meet, you know, Bill Hillman was one of the first ones because he was the one who gave us our tour the evening of the 6th because we were going to run the next day.
Yep, first day.
Highly recommend a tour by anyone.
Absolutely. And then another guy that we've met along the way, Xander. Alexander Fisk Harrison. I think Brian was actually doing a little research because Brian is the only one of us that hasn't been.
Yeah, rub it in.
Brian hasn't been. Yeah. Did you guys know that Brian hasn't been? But he threw out the name and I was like, Xander? Oh, yeah, we know Xander. But,
so this is my research on Wiki Travel was one of the sites I pulled up just to read a little bit about it. And John was mentioned. As well as, it was Alexander.
Yeah,
John Hemingway was mentioned. And then Xander was as well, which Tony picked up on right away in the book that he had written.
Yeah, he's got a great book also. I mean, we obviously interviewed John. Mm-hmm.
Probably should get Xander on.
Yeah. Well, Fiesta, How to Survive the Bulls of Pamplona. Mm-hmm. And he's also a matador. So he's done a lot of training.
That.
Yeah, he's done a lot of... And He's very, I'll say, Andrew's very worldly, and he's got a lot of stuff. I mean, he's awesome to talk to, great to hang out with.
Well, those were the two highly recommended on at least on Wiki Travel in regards to preparing yourself for running with the bulls. It's good to maybe do a little research and to maybe read this Xander's book and
I'd say this. That's a good place to start. We had a couple other friends who've done some stuff, Jim, and I can't remember some of the...
Bill Hillman, Wild Bill, who was our led us and kind of guided us through the thing along with Gus and Sue, he wrote a book. I think it was also 10 Ways to Survive with the Bulls in Pamplona.
That's right.
And the ironic thing is Bill is an experienced bull runner. At the time he took us on our tour in 2013, he'd already run 60, 70 times, according to my memory and what I believe he told us at that time. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he wrote the book in, I think, 2014, and then in 2015 he got gored. Hmm. And because he had written that book...
Actually, I think it was 14 he got gored.
Maybe it was 14.
It was the next year.
It was whatever year he wrote it the next year. I mean, he wrote it in the off season. Then when he ran the next year when the festival came up, he actually got gored and got gored pretty bad in the leg,
his thigh,
and hit the artery or was real close to it or the femoral artery.
Yeah.
Anyhow, but because he'd written that book and because he'd been gored so bad, he kind of blew up. I mean, he was worldwide on CNNs and Foxes and all that type of stuff and being interviewed constantly. But he was he was hurt pretty bad.
Yeah,
he was in the hospital for weeks and then even more therapy afterwards. So it wasn't a pretty sight.
You know, I can remember it. I don't want to make it about Bill. Bill's probably like, oh, God, can you talk about something else? Because he is a great author, by the way. But I remember, again, once you kind of get addicted to it, back then, one of the TV channels was doing live the runs. And since I didn't get to go that following year, I remember I was up, of course, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Of course, my wife's like, what the hell are you doing? I was like, I'm watching the runs. I'm watching them live. And they said, hey, coming up after today's run, we're going to interview one of the top American runners. And we're like, that's got to be Bill. I can't imagine who else it would be. And then afterwards, the run, and they're like, we're not sure where he is. And then all of a sudden, then you get that instant kind of thing, you're like, wonder what happened. And then you find out, you know, you're kind of like, oh my God, that's crazy. Because that was the first, obviously, person that we knew that had been hurt.
Has he been back since?
Oh, yeah, he's been back many times.
So you're right. It was 14 that he got gored, and 15 is when I went back again and with John Ribble and my daughter and his son. And we met up with him, and that was his first time back. And he was pretty timid and said it affected his run. He still ran. Mm-hmm. And had decent runs, but it affected his, you know, affects your mindset until you do it for a while. So, it definitely had an impact, but he's run since then and been gored since.
Yes. Yes.
I want to clear up something about running people. Yep. You know, you're a runner, Brian, you think, oh, you just go along and you run along bulls. Well, doesn't really work that way. You know,
they run fast.
They run fast, right. It's 0.8 of a mile and the course has a 90-degree turn in it. So, if you run, I've never heard of anyone that has run the entire course. They run sections of the course.
Can't.
A lot of people don't. Americans, we don't understand that if you've never been there and done that. So they think, oh, they just run 0.8 of a mile. No. Yeah. Bulls run at 35 miles an hour. You can stay in front of them for so long, and you have to be smart and get out of the way.
Yeah, as you mentioned, it's about, I guess it depends. It's about 0.7 of a mile, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
0.6 of a mile. But it's broken down into sections, and that's kind of what people run. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it typically lasts 3 minutes or less. Yeah. So that just to give you a perspective, and you can't run the whole
thing. Entire run.
The entire run. The bulls.
Plus the beginning's uphill, and then other parts are a slight incline.
Yeah, because so that's kind of how it starts. I mean, we'll give people a quick rundown before we jump into the stuff we need to hit on Pamplona, but... You know, at 8 o'clock, you know, well, I guess it opens up around 7:10, 7:15 is when they start, you know, putting up the right?
The barriers.
Well, the barrier, I mean, you can get in there before. The barriers 6:15. Are up, yeah, around 6.
6:15 is when they start. And we used to always, and everybody who does it a lot, you know, they have their kind of morning routines. And, you know, I've got mine now. I mean, it's not...
Well,
same as everybody, but it's you. We walk out in the morning and you step over the people who are passed out from the night before.
Yes, exactly. Let's be honest about our morning. It's never really a routine because you never know how the night before is going to go, right?
Well, yeah, you know, and that's
or if it's still going.
Or if it's still there, you go right, that, right to go.
You know,
right,
everybody's right different. There. I know when I've been running, I'm not out after a certain amount of time. I need a certain amount of sleep because. I'm not taking that kind of chance, but so get up, shower, walk out, and again, depending on where you're staying, it depends on how many drunk people, or passed out people you're walking over top of. I go down. I usually get a coffee at the little corner place. Walk into the places that sell the newspapers to get my newspaper, you know, to read what's going on and also to use for the run.
Right.
Meet up with our group of friends. Usually right around town hall, right? Mm-hmm. Walk down to the statue. Yeah.
Can I ask you? You just said the newspaper you use for the run.
Yeah right.
But well, there's a lot of different things. I mean, you roll it up.
Yeah.
And then it's not to swat. It's really
it's a moving thing in front of the eyes of the bull. So you run with the paper behind you rolled up, and they think that it maybe attract the bull because of its movement.
It's a help. You know,
don't really know.
I don't know if there's a full
science behind it. Right?
So if I run, what can I use to make the bull go away?
Nothing.
Jump. Well, your legs. That's what you could use.
But if you think of the matador and the cape, it's sort of that same theory.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just, you know, get something to focus on and get away from your body.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
But, you know, you also read the paper, though, what's awesome is the papers have... They're like prize fighters because the bulls are very, very revered. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, they're coming from the various ranches from throughout Spain. And, you know, it's a very noble thing to have your bulls run. And, you know, so they're all listed. All the bulls, all 6 of them that are running that day.
Their weights, their stats. Yeah.
Their colors, everything, their name.
And their farms.
Right.
If you know the farms, you know what type of bull you're getting. Some are real heavy. Some are real fast. Some are meaner than others.
Yeah. Some have never been around human beings.
They're all fighting bulls.
Yeah.
But some are meaner than others or have the reputation. The Muros, yes.
Yeah. So
the farms are like... the breeding farms are very equivalent to horse breeding farms here in the States. They take it very seriously.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's a real deal. It creates a whole commerce within itself.
We should get Xander on because he is a great aficionado on that. But.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry. I interrupted. You know, you were talking about your routine.
Oh, yeah. But that's just kind of it. You know, and then you go down. I'm not one to go down to the statue and sing, but I'm close to that. Down there on what's the name of the street? Oh, Santo Domingo, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, enjoying it. And then again, you get up there, and was it like 15 minutes before 8? It's when the police barriers break down, and you're allowed to go to wherever you want to run because they force you into a tight area.
To town square and down to the.
Yeah, just so they can clean the streets, make sure the barricades are all up and secure. And
well, they also are checking, they're making sure there aren't drunks.
Yep.
Obvious drunks in there. You can't have like pocketbooks or stuff, even a camera strapped on you. You're not allowed to wear GoPros on your head.
Right.
They're looking for those kind of things because, like, a strap, like if you're just carrying a bag or whatever, the horn could catch that strap and drag you. So they're making it's a safety check more than anything.
I saw that. Don't tie your bandana in a knot.
Oh, no,
right?
Your panuela.
Yeah, panuela in a knot, right.
Slipknot. In fact, when I had my daughter there the first time she was going to run, we were there, and I did not realize when we left our apartment or hotel and came down there, she had a little camera strap around her thing. And, I mean, it's literally, in the most stressful times, that 20 minutes or so, half hour, right before the rockets go off and the bulls are launched. I mean, the energy in that crowd is intense. And there's a lot of scared people, and you feel that energy. And, of course, this is the first time she's ever run. So, I mean, she's nervous, and everybody's nervous, and I'm nervous. I'm like, man, I hope this goes well for her. So there was a girl behind her that had a full big size purse. I mean, Lauren's little thing was only 2 or 3 inches wide, but it was a strap that she had around her neck. And just because she didn't know, and I didn't see it, and they got the girl behind her, and I said, get behind me, try to hide. And because I was like, man, it's 5 minutes till. You know, we don't have time to go take it to somebody or get out or whatever. And they saw her and they pulled her out and made her go.
And so she didn't get to run, right?
So she didn't get to run. So she went through all that upbuild and stress, and I'm like, I told her where to meet her at Chaco's, and you know, I wasn't gonna get out at that point, and she wasn't planning on running another time, but she couldn't go through all that and not run, so we had to come back the next day, which was fine, and she ran and went well. But they are serious about it. They will pull people out,
mainly a safety precaution.
It always totally about safety.
Again, don't wear a belt, anything that no leather belt that. If that, believe me, if those horns can hook something, they're going to hook something. It's crazy how that works out.
I mean, then you get dragged along.
And then you get dragged. It makes complete sense.
There's tons of, I mean, you can see tons of videos and pictures of it, but the one was 2017, I think, that year. It was a year I had a really good run, but we left the day before, so our final was the 13th, and we're in Madrid. And watching that morning, and that was the year that young guy had his panuela tied in a knot.
Saw that.
And he got caught up, and he was right at Calion going into the bull ring, and the bull literally went up underneath of his panuela, and he got drug.
Yeah,
and that was crazy. I mean,
he's lucky.
Fine.
I don't think he
turned out
through his skin.
It did not
under his panuela and drug him. I mean, he could have easily gone through his jaw.
Been
or
bad.
Jaw. Easy.
Oh, yeah.
It's happened all kinds of times.
Yeah. But so the course though is crazy. Like Jim was saying, you start off Santo Domingo, and it's like a 10-degree incline.
It's sharp. It's a pretty steep hill up cobblestones that usually in the morning are damp and slippery, and then the bulls, the rings down at the bottom that they keep them in, and they let them go, and there's about 50 feet or 50 yards before any of the runners are there. So they get this, even though they're going uphill, they get a head of steam.
Yeah, because one of the unique thing about them is their front legs are shorter than their back legs. So uphill, it's just a natural. They're fast.
Oh yeah, because it's all their powers
they're
coming
fast.
From. Right.
Yeah, and then you get to Town Hall.
They make a slight left.
Left onto Mercaderes, and then one of the, you know, La Curva is where you Mercaderes
or Dead Man's Curve.
Yeah, where it's a 90-degree turn to the right, where you get onto Estafeta. And then Estafeta is not quite as steep as Sentin.
Would that be the longest stretch?
It is. Probably? Yes. Absolutely, yes, the longest stretch. Then you get to the top of Estafeta. Then you take that. Well, that's when you kind of get off of the street, right?
Mm-hmm. And then veer left.
Onto Telefonica.
Yeah. Right.
Going into the.
Then the Caleone. Caleone is really where it goes into it. And it gets down to 3.5 meters wide.
Right, as they go in the tunnel to the bull ring.
And that has closed up before. I don't know when that happened.
That first year, because Wild Bill, there ended up being a pileup just as they got through the tunnel of people falling over each other, and they kept piling up and piling up, and the bulls couldn't get through. The people in the bottom were getting suffocated because of the amount of people on them, and the bulls are trying to jump over them, and they're ramming into people. And it was nuts, and Wild Bill was part of it, and he actually pulled somebody out that had gotten injured bad and couldn't do anything for themselves at this point, had been knocked out and unconscious, and they got him, got CPR, but they didn't think they were going to live.
Wow.
And I think, I'm pretty sure they did live, but it was a scary situation.
The last person that died was in 2009.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. So it the entire run for the bulls themselves is less than a mile?
Oh, no, yeah.
It's the same.
Eight tenths of a mile, somewhere around.
It's a little over half a mile.
Yeah.
Usually 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for a person running with the bulls, you're maybe 15 seconds.
Yeah,
is what
15,
you get,
30 seconds.
Maybe.
Right.
That'd be great.
Now, What lengthens that from 2 minutes to 3 minutes, and of course that minute is a long time when you're on that course, is there's a total of six
bulls. Yeah.
Well, there's six bulls, steers. And then six steers. So you got and cattle by nature are herding animals, and that's the reason for the steers, is the steers, and they're just as big, if not bigger.
They're
but they're tame, they're and they got cowbells on, so you know when it's a steer. But they're still scary if you don't know, or you think everything's gone, and then next thing you know, you look up and there's one coming. But either way, they're there to herd the fighting bulls, and the bulls themselves, as was mentioned earlier, they haven't really been around humans at all. I mean, they're trained to fight, and they're going to fight that night in the bull ring. So on some runs, they all stay in the pack and the herd, and they just roll right on through, and it's a quick 2 minutes, and nothing happens. Or, I mean, stuff happens, but it's a
not
quick,
dramatic,
it's a quick natural run.
Yeah, it's when you get separated.
But if a bull gets separated, then it
they
gets scared.
Dangerous.
It's looking and can't find the steers to herd them, or the rest of the crowd or the cattle, and then they'll stop, and then they're just looking.
Looking for somebody.
We're looking
to,
for anything.
Usually movement. Any movement
any
that
movement.
They say will draw their eye to the movement. So that's why when they're separated, that's at their most dangerous. Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's better when they're herding
well, they're
together.
Lost. Yeah.
Yeah.
When they're lost. They're
lost and scared.
When they're lost and scared and they happen and they put their eye on you, you might want to jump the fence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Seriously. Well, or go under.
Or go under.
Don't jump.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Just get
down
out of the way.
Well,
go down.
Always go down and get under. And if you fall down during the middle of it, you stay down until somebody comes
and cover up. I saw that. The right. Fetal position. You're better to get, I think it was Rick Steves said, you're better to get trampled six times than gored once.
Well, yeah, because it seems like the minute the people try to get up, that's when they get run over by a 1,300 pound animal hitting the head.
Right.
You know, you're done.
I don't know if this was the last person that died, but I remember this one in 2013 being told about this person. He had fallen down and then just stood up at the wrong time and got it right in
right
the chest and killed him instantly.
Wow.
Yeah, stay down.
Stay down.
Yeah.
The moral of the story is stay down.
Stay down.
Well, runners will tap you.
Yeah.
If it's clear,
people
will tap you and say it's clear. So.
And there are pastores. Pastores that are running along and they have long sticks. They're going to, if you're bugging and trying to pull the tail of the bull and stuff, they're going to slap you. But they're also there to keep the bulls going, too, to whatever degree.
Trying
or if they get separated to get them going the right direction and that type of stuff.
Okay.
So there are people with
that. And when you say they'll tap you, that's if you've gone down and you're staying
down. Yeah, stay down.
Tap you to
look
let
up.
You
they'll
know.
Just tap
let you know it's
clear.
Safe. It's clear to get up.
And the pastores you'll recognize, again, because they have the long reeds, but they also wear green.
Green.
Yeah,
green uniforms. I remember the first time we ran, and of course it's a blur. It goes pretty fast, and the bulls had gone by, and we were pretty close that first time. I mean, within a few feet, and your adrenaline and your heart's just beating. It's like, did this really just happen and all this? And then good 30 seconds, maybe even a minute later. I mean, because you've kind of taken that deep breath and think it's over. And next thing you know, you hear a big ruckus behind you, and there's another.
It's the sweepers.
We didn't know, but it was the sweeper steers that are coming through, which they're just as big, but they're not mean, and they're not looking to.
They're just
to
jogging.
But they're just jogging. They come through, but you don't know. It's the first time.
They're there to pick up just another bull and try to get it hurt in case it was
got lost.
By, right.
But it did the sweepers. First time. It kinda.
But the first time, you're like, oh, Jesus, and you're trying to get in a doorway or whatever. I mean, you know, experienced runners are going to laugh at you. But
of course.
But that first time, it's a little unnerving.
And you know, obviously, we've known several people that have been injured. You've been injured. One of the guys, dislocated his shoulder really, really bad. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he's ran since.
Right.
I think probably a little risky for him to run.
One of our friends got knocked out.
We won't talk about that.
Okay. Because
that was a steer. Teaser.
Right. Right, but they're just scary. As dangerous. Yeah, that's just it. He was running along.
He had a great run.
Had
too.
A great run in the middle of the pack, and of course he's looking. I guess over, and I might have the sides wrong, but looking say over his right shoulder at where the normal bull traffic was coming, and then he just happens to look over the left, and he gets hit a horn right underneath his eye, cut it open, knocked him out.
Yeah,
and it was a steer. And a steer's horn, but I mean, they're still 12, 14, 1500 pounds. So, yeah. I mean, the impact is big.
Those horns are still hard.
They're still hard, yeah. So,
I'll never forget. He said, I've been in several fights in my life, but I've never been hit that hard ever because I was out.
How does he even know? I mean,
well, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But wow. I will say this too, the Red Cross and the medical staff are top notch.
Yeah, they're on it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they're pretty diligent about it. That one run that I hit the deck inside the bull ring, and you know, it's sand, and I got hamburgered elbow and knee, and you know, lost my sash and all kinds of stuff, and rolled underneath of the fence. But as soon as they saw blood, they were like, "You need to go to." You know, mm-hmm. medical.
They make you get cleaned up, even if it's cuts, scratches.
And they have a buffer zone outside of the course. So they have the course that's separated by, like, let's say a split rail fence.
It's two rails of fence.
And then they have a buffer zone, and then they have split rail fence again. And that buffer zone is for all medical. So nobody's allowed to be in that buffer zone. It's for the medical personnel only.
So they can get you
and when
get
you
out.
Dive out, either jump over or dive under the fence, you're in the buffer zone, and if you're bleeding, that's where they tend to you.
Yeah, helped.
They've got it.
They literally helped drag me. Yeah. I mean, because I went down, and I think there were still two or three bulls behind me. And when I went down, of course, I'm crawling and rolling towards the side, and somebody reached in and grabbed me and drug me under, and then they were like, "Blood, you like, you got to go." Mm-hmm. So I can tell you that was probably the first time from an adrenaline. My adrenaline was pumping so hard, I got nauseous.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. Right.
That was pure adrenaline. But that was wild. Still to this day, the best run I've had. But.
Yeah, so needless to say, your adrenaline's pumping. If you're gored real good and you don't know it, you're gored in a major artery, you could bleed out real quickly.
We won't talk about that.
I think you'll know.
Yeah, we won't talk about that. Well, let's just say, so we talked about that. Let's go through. It is Pamplona. It is awesome. It's San Fermin, but... We still talk about our places to stay, mm-hmm. you know, things to do, and wine and dining. So, places to stay, and we are staying kind of around the San Fermin Festival in Pamplona,
old city,
yeah. So,
old quarter.
Places to stay. We've stayed. Well, you did stay in a hotel one time, right?
I did, and I wish I could have found the name of it. This was in 2015. It was about six blocks away from the main plazas and all, and it was a decent little hotel, a typical European kind of a boutique hotel, only like three or four floors, sort of like an old house. But John Ribble booked it, and I don't have the name, and I apologize because I wish I could give it to you, but it worked. And it, like I said, that was probably the furthest I stayed away, but still only five or six. Block walk and very easy to get back to. So there are hotels you can get fairly close.
How far in advance do you?
You want to be booking around the first of the year for July.
Okay, six months.
Yeah,
yeah. We've talked about this before on festival type of trips. I mean, try to book something where you can have a cancellation policy. So if there's a chance you're going to go ahead and book it. And that way you have a place, because the hotels, well, let's be clear. There's only room, expensive. What'd they say, for about 1% to 2% of the actual people who attend?
Yeah.
What?
Literally. So you should see it. It is the most chaotic looking thing you've ever seen. When these people camp out outside of the area, outside of the old town, outside of the city, and there's campgrounds, and these like two and three kind of buses that are linked together come rolling in, and it's like a packed subway of New York when they unload in the morning. I mean it's crazy, the number of people that are in town and the number of hotel rooms that exist. So we've rented apartments, and you know, we've got some decent connections and have been able to get some stuff. The first year we stayed at a hostel that's about five blocks from the Bullring. Yep. It was Hostel Hemingway.
Hostel Hemingway.
We still haven't figured out if it's open or closed right now, right?
Getting mixed signals. In our show notes, we're going to have a thing for top hostels in Pamplona, but it's one site says they're permanently closed, other says temporarily closed.
But it was
a good location, very cheap.
Yeah, it was very inexpensive. We booked January 2nd. Was the first time you could book. And they had just renovated it that year in 2013. They renovated it in January. We were there in July. It was a great location, great spot, inexpensive. Since then, we've stayed down closer to
In the middle
Castillo.
Of it. Those were Airbnbs?
Yeah, both of them we did through Airbnb.
But they were within a block or two of where you get into the street to run with the bulls.
And we have some good connections. I mean,
we do.
Graham with Pamplona Posse. We can in the show notes we can put that link up, and then also Mastarts.
And Stephanie Mastarts, heart of Pamplona. She rents apartments all through Pamplona year round.
Yeah,
that's what she does. So
we give a shout out to Stephanie.
And she'd be great.
Get that link out. So if you're looking,
absolutely,
it's a great place.
Give you an idea, Brian. I guess there's about 200,000 people in the population of Pamplona without, you know, normal times,
right?
They get about 2 million visitors in 2 weeks. Gives you an idea.
Eight days.
Well, yeah. There you go. So that's a lot of people in a week and a half.
And imagine the economic impact by not having it.
Right.
Wow, yeah. You're right.
That 8 days is.
They make their hay in those 8 days. They really do.
One of the other hotels, though, that I mean, I know it's expensive, and I don't even know how early it is. La Perla, which is right there by the Windsor, which we'll talk about, one of our favorite hangout places to have a beer or
beverage,
two.
Or,
however many. But La Perla is right there on the corner of the plaza. It's a great, grand old hotel, I have no idea how much that one is. But
yeah, during that week, it's probably pretty salty.
Yeah, but we've gotten great. The thing about it is, if we're talking about places to stay, you want to be in the old city center area, but you can go four or five blocks out from the plaza, and it's a little quieter. It's not going to be quiet. Let's be clear.
Right. Yeah.
There's no downtime.
And that's probably what the craziest thing, or the thing it's hard to prepare yourself for. If you're in that old quarter, there is no downtime.
No.
So four or five blocks away, you might get a little quiet time around four or five in the morning, but not total.
Till like six.
Yeah, till six. Yeah.
Seven.
Actually, the quietest time is like 11
a.m. Oh, so in the morning.
After
breakfast.
Breakfast, after the runs, 11 a.m. to 2-ish, 3-ish. That's the quietest time. And I found out,
siesta.
Hey, man, this is the time to sleep.
Well, that's what the smart thing is, right? That's what we always say. And with Jeremiah, we talk about this so many times. It's like, okay, you do your run, you go do your Chaco, you do your couple drinks, you go grab breakfast, which includes bottles of wine and whatever else, and maybe you do a couple other things, but you're supposed to be taking a siesta at lunchtime. And then you meet back up, usually at Windsor at 4 o'clock. If you don't get that nap, it makes for a long day.
It does.
A very long day.
Right. Well, it makes it even longer, because if you didn't get that nap, that means you were day drinking.
Yes.
Which goes along with morning drinking, which goes along with night drinking. And it's, yes, it's
it
a makes
long,
a long
just
day.
Blends it together.
Yeah.
Well, but then I would think you could sleep through all the chaos after that.
Yeah,
one
in
would
cases
think.
You can, yeah, but one would think. They call that passing out.
Yeah. Oh, I said sleep.
I do remember the 1 year, Eric, when it was me, Jim, and Eric, right? It was just us three that year. Mm-hmm. And Eric, I don't know if he volunteered or drew the short straw, but he had the front room.
Oh, right.
Oh, my God. And it was right on the street.
Right.
And I just remember those bands just rolling in at like 4 o'clock and just playing.
And that's when I found out. Oh my God! You know, and you don't get mad. What are you going to do?
Right.
I mean, they're banging big drums bigger than you, and there's bands going around 3-4 in the morning. You're just like, well, the heck with sleep. And then you find out, oh, 11 a.m. is the time to sleep.
Yeah.
You have to learn the hard way, I guess.
I mean, there was literally a bar across the street. There was one kind of underneath of us, and then one right across the street. And we were only on the second floor, and they didn't shut the doors until 6 a.m. Right. The music didn't stop. We were like, oh, my God.
Well, and Eric mentioned the drums. But these are little marching bands in drumline, little drumlines like you would have from
a
your high school band.
A dozen people or something.
Yeah, a dozen people, a few horns, and then a drumline. And they're just sitting there going at it. And usually they have one real big, at least
the bass drum. Yeah.
Bass drum that, I mean, one of these was 7-8 feet tall.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Huge.
On rollers. Awesome. They're rolling.
Yeah, they're rolling that, but they're beating the hell out of
it. I'm telling you, though, it is. And what people don't also understand is it is a very family oriented thing too. Obviously, the 8-year-old kids aren't out at 4 a.m., but the all day long. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a fantastic environment. I mean,
no, but the 12 and the 13 and the 14-year-olds
are. Yeah, but you know they have fun stuff. They do the kid bull runs. Yep. I mean, they chase them with sparklers. Like it looks. Imagine a wheelbarrow, and they got a bull in the front of it. It squirts it with squirt guns, type of thing. It's just a fun environment. I mean, but it is loud. It's busy. And there is a lot of
good street food.
There's a lot of stuff that happens in the street.
Uh-huh.
It
all happens in the street.
Some of it's sleeping. Some of it's drinking. There's fireworks. There's singing. There's
fireworks
concerts
every night, right?
Every night.
Yeah. Other things happening in the street.
There's all kinds of things happening in those streets.
Yes, they are.
And they clean them down very thoroughly every morning.
Yes, they hose them down.
Even the people.
Yes.
You're in the way.
Yes. You're in the way. Yes.
So, yeah, just think about that. If you're staying, if you are with your family, you don't want to stay in down that close. You want to get a little out more towards the Citadel and that area. Yep. Then you're at least closing from a walking standpoint, but you're not too crowded.
And it is family oriented, so you don't have to be, if the group you're with's not into the day drinking and the party and that part of the fiesta, it's still very family oriented. There's a lot going on. There's a carnival. There's lots of great food. There's lots of just stuff going on for the family. And you see lots, especially the Spanish families, you see the kids and the mom and the dad. And so you do see a lot of that. And it's a weird combination, but it's all there in white and red.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So we got places to stay, things to do. Obviously, the big thing is just the festival in itself and the chupanaza, the enceros, the bull runs,
and
closing ceremonies. There's tons of stuff like that. Of course, if you're into it or not, we can debate that to your blue in the face about the bull fights. But
those are in the evening, every night.
Evening. There's a lot of things to do. One of the things we've been doing recently is taking the break midweek. Mm-hmm. We took the bus to San Sebastian. About an hour bus ride.
15 minutes to an hour bus ride. I hear it's about the same by train, though we didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous. If you haven't heard of San Sebastian, it's a gorgeous coastal town. That's the, what's that an inlet for? Is that the Atlantic? Is that?
Oh, I don't know. There goes my geography.
It's kind of a bay, but France is on the other side, just so you know. But it's gorgeous. And the food there, they've got, three or four Michelin restaurants, but it doesn't matter where you walk in. The tapas are incredible.
They're just
the beach
insane.
Is incredible. I mean, it's just a fantastic place. And we did it on a break, but we need to go there for our own little vacation. I mean, it is that incredible of a place.
Yeah, the food was fantastic.
So when you say a break, how many How much time did you spend there?
It was a day trip. We literally got up. It was, you know, typically, again, you do the run at 8 o'clock. Some people skip it, obviously, but if you can still do your run, go to Chaco's, grab your couple of drinks, and then, you know, go hit the bus.
Yep, hit the bus.
50 minutes, you're up, and then you can get your bus ride back.
Whenever. However long you want to be there.
Yeah, what do we come back, like at 7?
Something like that.
Yeah, we're back. Get back in time for dinner, because, again, we don't eat till like 9.
Well, we've been eating all day at the Tapas restaurants. I mean, they were just incredible.
The food is just, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. San Sebastian, they're in a better day trip, to be honest.
No, anywhere. And again, and I know the first year, Jeremiah and them, they went up, they were there a couple of days, and then we met in Barcelona.
Yep.
There's a couple of the top restaurants in the world are in there, so definitely a good day trip.
Have we talked about how to get there, actually, from most people?
We just grabbed
the bus up through the Pyrenees. I mean, so even the ride's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then you get to this coastal town that's just gorgeous.
The one thing I will say, and it's no matter where you are, just be careful. They are very, very cautious on drinking and driving during the festival. So when you take a bus out of there, as soon as you get to the outskirts of Old Town, there must have been 30 cop cars just pulling people over or checking and doing whatever. Because, you know, it's a big festival. They just want people hitting the streets. So don't even consider it. Don't rent a car. Don't go driving if you're consuming. So just
There's plenty of other ways.
Buses and trains. Don't even worry about it. But
absolutely.
But the Citadel, that's kind of cool too. And there's a lot of history to that. We don't have time to really kind of dig into that piece of it, but we did a big tour of that the first year that we went. That's also kind of where the fireworks each night.
Right.
During San Fermin, that's what's really cool is every night there's fireworks.
Right.
And very good fireworks.
Very good fireworks.
They put on a show.
Yeah, it's a show. The only thing we haven't done is closing ceremony.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. We definitely do that.
That would be fun. I would like to enjoy that.
That's got to be kind of an emotional too, though.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that whole closing and wrapping up, you know, that whole ending, but it's kind of cool. But anything else we can think of things to do? I mean, I know there's a lot to do, but I think that's probably the... I mean, if you're there for the festival, that's
yeah, really I mean, the festival really is what takes everything up, and there is so much going on with the festival that those are your day trips.
I remember the last time we were there, we were stumbling around the outskirts of it, and we stumbled upon an outdoor eating area.
Yeah, we know where that.
Right, I remember exactly.
That's over close
where
to
is.
The hotel near the Irish pub.
And there were, how many of us were there? Probably there were at least 6 or 7 of us at that time. And
I was napping.
Yeah, you were napping. And they brought us a picnic table full of food.
Oh, that.
I mean, it was a picnic table full of food.
Yeah, that was.
Steak. Steak that thick and all kinds of. We're like, we didn't mean to order all this food, right. But we ended up eating it, didn't we?
That was one of them. Usually the language barrier is not bad with your servers. Right. It was very bad there. and us not knowing Spanish. So we're saying, well, yeah, we'll take this, and this. Oh, and they're shaking their head, yeah. And they just brought gobs of food. This is like at midnight, and we weren't that hungry.
Well,
and, I mean, just got a ton. I mean, steak and you see it on the spit there. They're, you know.
Sausages.
Oh, my goodness. The food was incredible.
It was really good.
We got way more than we needed or wanted. But it was incredible.
Yeah.
And these were just tents. So they were set up sort of like a fair. Mm-hmm. So it's not like a restaurant we can say it was this restaurant. It was part of the festival, and
you just walked around the outskirts of the tent, and you just picked what you wanted.
Yeah,
you know what they were cooking on grills and spits and everything.
Yeah, well, that kind of leads into, you know, typically our third segment when we talk about destinations is, you know, the wining and dining. Where do you eat and drink, and you know what's good, and you know Spain is obviously famous for their pinchos, their tapas, small dishes. And the first year we got there really early, you know, we were there early, the 4th or the 5th.
Opening ceremonies.
So we were before opening ceremonies, you know, and we got to see some of the places prior to the festival. And just like with anything, they kind of change, I think, some of their food than some of the bars.
Make it easier on themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's some great places. Mm-hmm. It's just like anything that's kind of touristy. You're going to have some of them that are just okay. I mean, you're just there to for sustenance, to soak up some of the,
the bread and water.
The beer you've been drinking from earlier, or but there's some great places, just some places to eat. I'm going to be selfish. I'm not going to share a couple of them that we found. Just being truthful, because that's part of the adventure. Go find things that you like, right? And there's some cool places that I will share. I mean, right off of the main plaza, Castillo, is it Tagliatelle's? We hit that every time.
Yep, it's an Italian restaurant.
It's great Italian pizza, pastas. It's big.
So you can see,
and that's what I was saying. So we can share that one because there's usually plenty of capacity.
And they're used to rolling people in, because it's right there in the main plaza. Yeah. So they're going to do business no matter what. But it is good.
I still cracks me up that one year that Jeremiah rolled in and he'd had a little drink,
slightly.
And he just ordered a pizza and he didn't pay any attention to it, and it had tuna fish on it.
Yeah, tuna on the pizza,
not like raw, like fresh, like sushi grade tuna. I mean, it was like
it was like canned tuna on the pizza.
Yeah, it was like the most bizarre pizza. And he was like, "Wow, I didn't know I ordered that."
Yeah, you ordered that, Jeremy.
Yeah, but it is great.
Ate some of it,
but we always go there. I've never had a bad meal there. Yeah, a couple of places.
Tell us.
No, it's all good.
Good.
Well, I don't know about the tuna, but
yeah. Right.
But there's a couple great places, great little steakhouse that had, oh my God, just some great food.
It was
not too far from there.
It was right around the corner. I don't remember the name of it. And
well,
it's
again,
small.
I'm not going to share.
And then Tony's not sharing, but it was very good.
Some of the steakhouses may be serving the bull that fought.
Not for that. No, well, that's special. You'd have to get that. They had to butcher all that. That didn't happen that soon, but that happens later. But one of the interesting things is about the whole festival is kind of like the parties and the camaraderies, like the vodka party. And, you know, John Hemingway mentioned in his book, Bacchanalia, you know, some of the things that we've attended, which is really cool. But Jeremiah, I mean, a lot of the people have started kind of like these trends as far as this is what we're going to do, Guinness Mondays, right? That's not just a Pamplona thing. That's kind of all over the globe as far as having a Guinness on a Monday. But if there's one or two Mondays that happen during those 8 days, we pretty much know where our crew of people are going to be.
At the Irish pub drinking Guinness.
Yes,
on that
absolutely. And lots of it. And it's fun. I mean, it's just kind of a great thing. The vodka party is cool. But Jeremiah started one too. You know, he invited everybody. There's a cool Asian place, Asian food, not too far off of Estafeta.
Really?
Invites the whole crew. And God love him, he takes care of the bill, and
he does. We were there that time, and you know, you usually get through 3 or 4 or 5 courses and think, I mean, it just kept coming. It was like 8 or 10 courses just kept coming and coming. It's like, dude, can we just leave? I mean, we've been here a couple hours now.
We're done eating.
Well, you think you're done, and they bring something else out.
I'm like, I can't eat anymore. I'm like, exactly. What are you doing? Of course, this is like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night when you sit down for dinner, but. But that's kind of, it's Jeremiah's thing. It's just awesome. We know that, I think he does that on Tuesdays.
I think so. I think that's a Tuesday.
Tuesday or Wednesday. Everything's based off of a day, right?
Yep. You tend to lose track of time, don't you?
Yeah, so it's all based off of the day. So, you know.
Well, the festival starts July 6th every year,
correct,
right? So it's going to be a different day every year.
Yep, yep.
So the Tuesday is not necessarily the same day of the festival.
See, it just doesn't matter. It's just like Guinness Mondays. Like 2017, I think, again, we rolled in. Mm-hmm. We got in on Tuesday. We got to Madrid on Monday and took the train up Tuesday morning.
Yep.
And we knew we were going to run Tuesday. By the time we got in, you know, it's afternoon. We're like, we don't even need to text anybody. We don't need to call anybody. We know exactly where everybody is. It is Monday. Irish pub, here we come. Mm-hmm. And literally, we just rolled in. What's up, guys?
Absolutely.
Wait, is there just one Irish pub, though?
There's actually two, but there's only one that we all go to.
Right.
Okay.
And it says Irish Cafe Pub, but it's also called, name is Cervecia Baztan.
Cervecia Baztan.
Yep. Baztan.
It's near the One Hotel, right on the outskirts of the old area. But, several blocks from Plaza de Castilla, but still, it's just awesome. But
it is.
it's just one of those things. And then food. The other thing I would say too is breakfast is a brick thing. We'll talk. I guess we can kind of combine some of the drinking and the eating. We've talked about before, at least our crew and a lot of, I would say, the non-Spanish runners tend to, gather at Chaco.
Yep, Bar Chaco.
Right there in Plaza Castillo. After you run, it's kind of like a check-in point. And
yep, everybody gathers, celebrates, make sure everybody's all right. If somebody doesn't show up, figure out what happened to them. Somebody usually saw what happened. And then they have either vanilla or chocolate Brandy Alexanders that they serve out of a window.
Yeah, so, pretty much.
So it's
spectacular.
Yeah.
So what's a Brandy Alexander?
It's basically brandy or like cognac, right?
Yep, cognac.
And chocolate or vanilla milk.
Yep, like a Yoo-hoo. Think chocolate Yoo-hoo.
That's it.
Or vanilla.
It's delicious.
It is delicious. It is good.
I'm a big vanilla guy.
Nectar of the gods.
You know, I usually like chocolate versus vanilla, but not in those.
Yeah.
I'm a vanilla guy.
I am too. I didn't like the chocolate ones either.
I'm going to tell you, after two of them.
All right.
If you step into the third one, it's going to be a big day.
And see, Brian, you see what happens.
You'll be one of the people on the street.
The third one usually happens.
Yeah, it does.
Well, you see what happens. So what happens is you run, you go have your drinks at Bar Chaco, and then everybody goes out to breakfast, usually 15, 25 people. Then you eat breakfast, and then half of those people end up continuing on to day drinking, and the other half go and take a nap. Well, whatever half you're in determines probably the rest of your day. Yeah. It's kind of happens right there in the morning.
If you pick the wrong group, what you had planned probably isn't going to happen.
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
You could end up at breakfast with 14 bottles of wine, and it's not lunchtime.
It's been known
yet.
To happen.
Because after you've done it a couple times, you're like, all right, what am I going to do? Am I going to stay here and drink, or am I going to go nap?
Yeah.
You know, so you just make
There's consequences.
Decision. There are consequences, well, yeah. Right?
You know, you get up, you're a little hungover, you make the run, the adrenaline kicks in. You're still very tired. You go to Bar Chaco, and those first couple of Brandy Alexanders kick in, and you're like, I start feeling a little better.
That adrenaline, though, is just such a...
The adrenaline,
you get a little cocky, maybe.
Oh, sure.
Not necessarily cocky, because you're like, oh, man, I didn't feel good this morning. And then you get that breakfast, a little food, and then somebody starts ordering those little bottles of wine.
Oh, yeah, rosé with breakfast.
Rosé with breakfast, and...
Yep. Can't go
Next
wrong.
Thing you know, you're rolling.
Next thing you know, it's 3 p.m.
You feel invincible, but you're not.
Right.
And then you're like, do I really need a nap? I don't know. Maybe not. A couple of other places, though. I mean, food-wise, like I said, I think you can't go wrong with the pinchos and the tacos. And there's also a Burger King right on Mercadero.
Oh, yeah, right in the middle of
right
it.
Right in the middle of it.
Right on the course.
It's pretty crowded. But
it is. It's two floors.
Yeah. But there's great little street food, little pizzas. Yep. You know, I would say there's just good stuff all over the place.
Pastries, coffees.
Try your own thing. I mean, that's what I would say, hands down, is just explore.
And get off a block or two, and then you're going to that's where you really find the little diamonds in the rough.
Find little cool stuff.
Because they're not like America. You don't always know there's a good restaurant. There aren't big signage. So, I mean, there are in some places, but in a lot of places, you're going in and you were told to meet there, and that's how we found that steakhouse.
Yeah.
There was no sign for it.
Ooh.
And it was up just a doorway, up a flight of steps, and we're like, are we sure we're in the right place? And there was nothing that had you give you any idea you're going to a restaurant.
So did somebody refer you to this restaurant? Yes. So you got a recommendation then?
Yeah, but I mean, that's just it. Get out and explore, because there's a lot there. But if you're just walking by, you might not know it's there.
It's okay to get lost in Pamplona. It's really not that big, and you really can't get lost. I mean,
follow the noise, you'll find your way back.
It'll take you to the center, and once you get to the center,
somebody will show you the way. Yeah.
So get lost. Have fun.
But as far as places we tend to congregate, I mean, we do share the love with a lot of places to have a drink. But, I mean, again, our crew typically, the Chaco in the morning, we disperse. But everybody meets back up.
Right.
Right.
Well, just to give them a center point, Plaza Castillo is a big, huge plaza, old style, center of town type thing where they have a lot of concerts and stuff there. It's just a huge open square. And then around the outside are the bars and restaurants. So all these places Tony's about to start talking about are kind of centered there.
Yeah. Yeah. So we all meet up at Windsor, Bar Windsor. I mentioned it before. It's right near the one hotel. But it's just a great place. It's on the corner of the plaza. Mm-hmm. We all hang out, take up anywhere from 2 to 20 tables. And
yep.
Depends on how many people
depends on the crowd and at what time.
Yep.
Bar Windsor's mentioned in Hemingway's original book, isn't it? Sun Also Rises or Chaco? One of the two are mentioned.
Oh, Aruna is.
Aruna. Yeah.
Cafe Aruna, which Cafe is Aruna.
Right across.
Right across from it.
Right.
And that has, I think they took down the statue, didn't they, of Hemingway?
I'm not sure. I've got a picture with it.
Yeah, it was up there originally, but I think they may have moved it or taken it out.
Maybe, but if so, it was just in the last couple of years.
Yeah, but Cafe Aruna is right there. It's fun too. I mean, mm-hmm. all those bars through there yeah. is
a lot of activity
good.
Going on.
Another good piece of advice is take Euro. A lot of times you can't get into the banks and get. I had that problem like maybe the second time I went. Somebody needed to get money. And we kept going into the banks and couldn't.
Cash machines.
Man. Just used ATMs.
Right.
Cash machines. There's one right from Windsor. I can literally just visualize it. It's one block away, right towards Mercaderes, right on the corner. You're close. There's a lot of cash machines through there now that's much easier.
But credit cards used.
Yeah.
You can.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can. I mean, it's just. A lot of times it's easier to from just a cash perspective because it does get busy and it's kind of crazy. And you know, when there's a group, we end up kind of running a little bit of a tab and paying it. But when you're just kind of towards the end or something, you're kind of going to one offs, it's a little easier just to kind of just go in and grab a couple drinks and go. But, I guess those are our favorite places. Again, there's a ton of places to go, things to see. And again, we talk about the bucket list things. I mean, I don't know what our bucket list looks like. It's a little different probably than a lot of people's, but this is one of those things that I would say, I don't know how to describe it. I really don't. I mean, I know some people look at us like you are absolutely insane. absolutely crazy.
I can remember coming back the first time I went and my son was probably late teenager and I thought, you know, teenagers in our country, you know, they know how, you know, 19, 20-ish. They have fun and learn how. They don't hold a candle to the Spaniards. Sorry. They really don't. Once I went through that opening ceremony and I realized what a good time they have, I'm like, I said to myself, well, we have to get some Americans over there to experience it because we just don't do anything like this over here. We really don't. Not like they do. It is a different experience.
Well, their society doesn't frown on it.
Right, yeah.
It really is a big celebration. That's
it
the
really
big.
It really is. And you feel it when you're there and when you really feel
and
it.
And I would say this. It's one of those situations that I don't know if I've really felt any negative vibe in the multiple times that I've been there.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree.
And usually when we're in Pamplona, we're there for about 5 days, four runs, you know. Typically 5 days, and I just don't recall really any negative situations.
Except pickpocketing a little bit.
Well, yeah, but that happens. Right. I mean, that has nothing to do with the people that are there. That's people taking advantage of a situation.
Right.
But the people that are there to have a good time. And when you get that many people in that environment, it's just amazing that you don't have any situation. There's not fights. There's
rarely.
Not arguments.
Nah.
I mean,
rarely.
It's just a very, very
jovial,
good time.
Right.
You know, people are just there to have fun.
Everybody's there for the same reason, to let loose, enjoy life.
And just have fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to be in that kind of frame of mind, and you can have a good time. And I highly, highly recommend it. And again, it's one of those things, like we said before when we started the show, I think it either bites you and you love it, or you're like, I don't need to do it again.
Yeah. Yep. I've been there, done that. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know. I'm ready to go back.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's what stinks with it being COVID and canceled. I mean, I was planning on going this year and seeing all the people, and you see how sad or upset our friends are on Facebook. And I think that's where social media has made a big difference because you see these people. That's the only time you see them in person is at the festival. But you do stay in touch, and you see what they do in their regular lives when they're not just wearing white and red and all that. So it's pretty cool. So you get that kind of bond going, and so then you're excited to see them. You want to see them. You want to go have those drinks and get a little crazy. So it's a cool situation.
Yeah, I mean, one of the guys we met a few years ago, Ricardo, lives out in Colorado, and he said he just posted a little while ago, can't believe I met all you guys literally just 5 years ago, you know, in his first time that he went. He's like, I feel like I've known everybody forever. And that's just kind of what happens. It's just comes like a big camaraderie, which is really cool.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
It is.
Yeah. So, well, Pamplona.
Pamplona.
Yep.
San Fermin.
We're going to miss you this year.
We are going to miss you. Viva San Fermin. Yep.
Viva San Fermin.
Viva San Fermin.
Yeah. So, until next year, I guess.
Yep. Right? Absolutely. So, yeah.
Brian, wow. You gonna go next year?
Oh my gosh! Thinking of that, can you imagine what it's gonna be like?
It's gonna be fun.
Holy cow!
I heard they were gonna do it for 2 weeks next year to make up for this.
You know, Brian, I think you're on to something there. Right? But you may want to call Spain.
I tell you what, it'll be a little bit unleashed. I think for a lot of
wow. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Because
can't wait to see Maybanks.
Oh my! Yeah,
it's all a group of people that just love to let go and know how to let go and have fun and enjoy themselves. And I can imagine how it's going to be after missing a year.
Yeah.
You know, because they really look forward to it.
It'll be good.
Absolutely. So,
well, again, I guess we can wrap up on this one. Anybody got any parting shots, any final thoughts?
If it's on your bucket list, do it. You won't regret it.
Well, again, check out, you know, we're going to have our show notes up. We're going to add some things on there. If anybody has any questions about it,
yep.
Any thoughts, concerns, ideas? You know, hey, shoot us a message.
Absolutely.
Reach out on Facebook or any of the social media again.
Absolutely.
Catch us at Friends That Carry On. Of course, check out the website friendsthatcarryon.com. And again, don't forget to get on there and register and look out for the fan page so you can win one of the 4 or 5 trips a year that we're going to give away.
Absolutely, good stuff. Maybe you go to Pamplona.
I was going to say, maybe
we'll do a little organized.
If you did that, somebody might join you.
Yeah.
Somebody in the group may possibly.
Somebody will be there.
No,
somebody
we'll be there.
Right? Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
You just don't have to hang out with us if you don't want
to. Can whatever. It's your choice.
But again, please shoot us a message if you have any questions on anything or any ideas or thoughts. And again, check us out on the website and I guess we'll catch you guys again next week. Oh, again, don't forget to check out the new thing that we just started is our weekly travel updates.
Yes.
Yeah.
Our normal podcast has been dropping on Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And now on Tuesdays, Monday or Tuesdays, we'll have a travel update.
Right. From our travel experts from around the country, giving their insight on the best deals and places to be booking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next week will be Tom Carnes out of Lamakia Travel in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Very good. So they're just helping us update on as things are starting to unwind, hopefully, and what's opening up around the globe, and you know, deals that are available and what you can jump on. They're typically 15 to 25 minute kind of podcast, but just kind of let you know what's going on.
Chock full of information,
absolutely.
Yep. So good info, really good info. With Tom.
Definitely listen to the episodes that are coming up. So
yep, absolutely.
This one has an incredible offer that if you catch,
you don't
want to
say that
right
now because this one's going to drop behind that one.
No, it'll before it expires. Oh well, this one. I see what you're saying. Yeah. So
we're a little off our timing.
Maybe it might still be.
Yeah,
available.
The offers there'll be another offer.
There'll be other offers. Yeah, when Tom's not giving us advice, Maddie K from Maddie K Travel in Long Island, New York, will be giving us advice.
Yep,
so
awesome.
two great travel experts.
Yeah. So again, stay tuned. And again, so thanks everyone, and we'll be in touch. I guess next week.
Absolutely.
Next week.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
Adios.
Be sure to join the Friends next week for another great discussion. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. You can also find the Friends and other content at www.friendsthatcarryon.com or check us out on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook by searching Friends That Carry On. Thanks again for joining us, and don't forget to carry on, friends.